Okay, let's get going. Here we go. Hour number three tonight. We're going to do some very interesting research into the two platforms of the injections that are being given to people around the world. And again, as I just said a few minutes ago, the percentage of people injected in the world, the top two countries, as far as I can determine, are the U.S. and the U.K. The U.K. is number one at nearly 60% already with at least one injection. The U.S. is right behind at about 50% with at least one injected. I think we have nearly 150 million here who are supposedly fully injected at this point. That's very high. So we're talking 50 to 60% in the U.S. and the U.K., and in Russia, less than 10%. Now, just keep that in mind as we move forward. Now, there's, again, I want to repeat this. The Dr. Luc Montagnier quote apparently now has been extracted correctly from one of his interviews in which he did say, and this is the quote now from Natural News, "There is no hope and no possible treatment for those who have already been vaccinated. We must be prepared to cremate the bodies." Dr. Luc Montagnier stated plainly during the segment on video. That's what the story says here. And then Natural News, pretty good, pretty accurate. So we'll leave it there at the moment. In the UK yesterday, I'm going to go back to this story again. Cancer epidemic sweeps Britain. Why? The story says, due to the government's stay-at-home orders. I don't think so. And to find out more about all this and to talk about those two different vaccine platforms, which have the same net result, and that is to literally immerse, pickle your body in the toxic spike proteins and maybe other things, is Erica Kahn, MIT microbiologist. Welcome back, Erica. Thanks you for being here. Thanks for everything you've done for us. It's been very helpful.
Hi, Jeff. It's good to be back again.
So when I talk about a cancer epidemic in the UK, blamed on the lockdown stay-at-home orders, what comes to mind?
Well, in the UK, they have been refusing to treat people for various conditions. I mean, with the reasoning that the hospitals need to save their capacity and their reserve for COVID patients. So
sure.
They've been deferring all kinds of surgeries and elective and otherwise for over a year now. So there are legitimate cases of people that, you know, need treatment and that aren't getting it. But,
right.
You know, we can't discount the contribution of these immune suppressive vaccines that have now been foisted on the population for the last 6 months.
We have seen a number of reports of cancers, not just in the UK, but elsewhere. And this may relate to the suppression, or is it destruction, of the P53 in the human body, the anti-tumor agent? What is your understanding of how the spike protein deals with the P53? I know it represses it, or does it actually destroy it? And the P53 is not the only gene that is an anti-tumor operative in the body. It's not the only one, but it's a key one. What do you know about that?
I haven't seen much on the influence of the spike protein on how it regulates or dysregulates that P53 protein. But the P53 protein is the guardian of the genome. So it basically decides if there's too much damage in a cell, whether it can be repaired or the cell should commit apoptosis and be disposed of. So when there are things affecting that P53 gene, you've got problems. You've got problems. But these vaccines in and of themselves are a burden to the immune system. Their mechanism of action is very dysregulating. I mean, basically the immune system is hijacked for the sole purpose of generating antibodies to a very specific antigen, in this case, the spike protein. And so I think for a period of time, maybe indefinitely, it's consumed now with dealing with the effects of these injections at the expense of normal housekeeping.
The body's cells produce how many different types of proteins normally? What would a cell produce? Dozens? Hundreds? How does it all work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It depends on the cell type.
Sure.
I mean, let's take, for example, your pancreas. It produces insulin. You know, the liver produces a wide range of all kinds of proteins, blood proteins, and I mean, you've got the bones that produce also blood proteins and bone cells themselves. It's endless.
So, okay, when one gets injected, what happens to the body's cells, of which there are trillions and trillions? Are they, over time, invaded, and we're going to talk about the two platforms, and completely commandeered to produce only the spike protein, or is it the majority of proteins they produce are the spike protein, or do we even know? We know it's a hell of a lot.
Initially, first of all, it depends on which cells come into contact with the vector or these lipid nanoparticles. And those are the ones that are targeted and have this mRNA delivered to it so that it can begin expressing the protein that it codes for. Now, in a normal cell, once it realizes that it's producing foreign proteins, it goes into a virally infected state and protein production should stop. And there's a couple mechanisms of action that the cell can take to halt protein production.
Is that a precursor to cell apoptosis or death? If it shuts down protein production?
It could go in that direction. It depends if the cell can rid itself of this material. A lot of times apoptosis is the result, but not all the time. So it's imperative, to overcome a viral infection that the cell realizes it's been hijacked and then ceases the protein production so the virus can't reassemble itself or replicate itself. Not everybody is successful in stopping that. I mean, the main molecule that stops protein production in a virally infected cell is interferon. But in some people, they don't have the right machinery enzymes that recognize a virally infected cell, so protein production continues at the expense of the cell.
Right.
And there's other situations where that can happen too, where you just get this runaway protein production that occurs and progresses unabated for a period of time, churning out these foreign proteins, and now you've got a problem. If we believe what they're telling us is in these things, it should be coronavirus spike proteins.
Mm-hmm.
Very toxic, biologically active foreign proteins. So it's critical that once the cells are infected with this genetic material that causes the cell to start churning out these toxic proteins, that process comes to a stop.
We're literally talking about drowning the body over time, maybe as little as a week or two. I don't know how fast all these things change in terms of the spike protein commandeering a cell and instructing it to begin to produce spike proteins. But the body is literally drowning in these synthetic spike proteins, which are known now to damage the blood, damage the blood circulatory system and the brain and the heart and on. So the body is drowning in these potentially mortal synthetic proteins. It could
Yes.
I mean, this is not a joke. This is real bad stuff. And there's no way to rid yourself of spike proteins. You just can't drink something or take a few supplements and they're going to go away. Not so far as we know.
Well, if you cannot correct this and eliminate the cells that have been transfected and are now producing the spike protein, this could be a lifelong issue. Now, some cells are better at producing proteins than others. The muscle mm-hmm. cells are very, very good at producing proteins, which is why they inject you in the muscle cell as opposed to, like, underneath the skin or anywhere else. It goes directly or should go directly into the muscle. And then from there, a lot of this material gets transported to the liver, and the liver is like a protein factory. That can churn mm-hmm. out protein like nothing else.
So you're saying the spike protein will affect, obviously, liver cells and convert them to producing spike proteins?
Yes. And certainly we are seeing evidence of that. A lot of people are ending up with liver issues from these vaccines.
So, now, you do a lot of research on this. What kind of liver issues are you reading about?
Well,
diminished function, bad liver panels on blood tests. What are we
seeing?
Yeah,
yes. All of that. I think the most notable thing is the clotting issues. A lot of the clotting factors are synthesized in the liver, and if the liver is consumed with dealing with or producing spike proteins at the expense of what they should be producing, therein lies a problem. I know people have had issues with blood sugar, and that, uh-huh. that's can be a liver issue. It goes on and on. It's really quite frightening,
okay.
this regulation that's happening as a result of these injections. It may or may not be correctable.
I don't want to, again, sound too negative, but I don't know how to read very much positive into this. What positive can be read into a body that has been largely flipped over, no longer produces, in many cases, depending on the cells, the limitless numbers of different kinds of proteins that the body needs for various functions, and is primarily producing one kind of synthetic protein that is demonstrably toxic to the human body and life as we know it? This is just not going to work. At least not the way I see it.
The whole concept is absolutely ludicrous. It just makes no sense at all. I mean, you dysregulate everything for a period of time to generate some kind of immune response that may or may not be beneficial. I think that's yet to be proven, because these people that are getting these injections don't appear to have any protection against contracting COVID, whatever COVID is.
Whatever it is, right.
They appear to be more susceptible to not just COVID, but a whole range of opportunistic infections or bacteria, viruses, fungi, cancer.
I think you're right, and I think this is going to really begin to display itself in a rather grotesque dynamic. This fall, if Dr. Tenpenny's right, and several agree with her, that it's going to really start to show up and manifest this fall and winter. Let's go back to the two vaccine types now. We've got the Pfizer, Moderna, that's the mRNA, that's where Moderna got its name, a modified MOD RNA. So what do we have with Let's jump over to the other. We've heard a lot about the mRNA. We've talked about that. It's covered with the nanolipid layer to make sure it gets in to do what it's supposed to do, and then it's got propylene glycol, PEG, on top of that.
Polyethylene glycol. Otherwise known as antifreeze.
That's it. Okay. Well, we got to have antifreeze for this cold winter, you know. Here we go. Let's talk about the AstraZeneca and the Johnson & Johnson. They use a whole different way of getting your body to produce something that is inimical to good health and life, which is the synthetic spike protein. So what about this? Take the J&J, and just assuming that we're talking about the AstraZeneca product as well. They're using a virus to transport this instruction to produce coronavirus. And the spike protein from the coronavirus in the body. So what is this adeno? Some people say that, but it's adenovirus. And how does it work? What is it actually doing to cause the body to produce a synthetic spike protein?
It's creating a genuine infection. It's a live virus. They take an adenovirus, which is common. There's something like 57 of them that have been identified that can infect humans, but there's types that can infect dogs and other animals. And what they do is they'll genetically modify it to remove some of the machinery that allows it to replicate and replace it with a protein coding gene. In this case, it'll be the spike protein for the coronavirus, so that when it is injected into a human and manages to get into the cell and infect it, the genes will tell the cell to start producing spike protein.
Rather than the mRNA doing it.
It's a different delivery.
Okay. All right, so we're putting... tell us more about this adenovirus. What kind of a virus is it? Is it something that's commonly found in people? Do we just carry it around? Is it unique?
Yes, it's extremely common. Most people are exposed to adenoviruses when they're between 1 and 2 years old. Mm-hmm. And we're exposed repeatedly to them throughout life. They're very durable. Unlike the coronavirus that has a lipid envelope on its exterior, that makes it a lot more susceptible to environmental damage. Whereas the adenovirus, it's an icosahedron capsid, and it's very durable. It can withstand quite a wide range of environmental conditions and not be destroyed. Compared to the coronavirus that can only live in the best of conditions, maybe 48 hours on a dry surface. The adenovirus can live anywhere from 7 weeks to 3 months.
Really? On a dry surface?
If conditions are humid or somewhat moist, that will extend its lifespan. It's not very susceptible to drying like these lipid enveloped viruses are.
Uh-huh.
So that's a little bit of a concern because we're using this as a vector to deliberately infect people to make them produce spike proteins for some perceived advantage. However, the problem is that, number one, they can be shed, even though they're telling you they're not shedding. There's reason to believe that they are, and deliberately so, and they can also mutate. They can evolve. And if they do, so now we've got some chimeric genetically modified virus that's going to be pervasive in the environment and end up infecting people whether you want it or not, and probably doing more damage than the original coronavirus that we're trying to protect everybody from. Because the adenovirus can infect a wide, wide range of cells in the body, of cells. Typically, it's a respiratory virus, but it can also end up in the GI tract, and it also infects the eyes. I mean, many cases of conjunctivitis are actually an adenovirus infection. But
really?
It can also infect the liver. I mean, dogs have an adenovirus that causes it's almost fatal in puppies, a form of hepatitis that just will kill them. Adenoviruses can infect nerve tissue, the endothelium, the brain, the heart. So it's got a very broad
and
host range.
What it's It's being put in the body to produce something that can do all of those things and more that you just mentioned. This is complete insanity, complete madness. Now, go ahead.
It's almost ludicrous when you think that we were at the tail end of a so-called pandemic, if we want to believe it was ever a pandemic, that it was starting to fizzle out and we were reaching some sort of an equilibrium with it. Now they've introduced some chimeric virus that's more hardy and more infective than the original one, and co-opting people's cells to produce the most toxic portion of the COVID virus. You know, the spike protein, the thing that does the most harm.
Incredible. To allegedly trick your immune system into getting ready to attack it should you ever become infected with coronavirus and have to deal with spike proteins in the future. This is complete madness. It sounds completely anti-science, not to mention common sense. It sounds deliberately designed to kill people. That's what it sounds like to me. We have to take a little break. Hold on. I'll be right back with more for all of you out there all around the world who care about this, and I hope you do. Back in a minute. Okay, we're talking about the Johnson & Johnson and the AstraZeneca branch of the two arms of terror that have been unleashed on the public. The idea of a virus, attenuated, which means weakened, allegedly, and we don't know how successful that process is or how weakened the adenoviruses are that are put into the vaccines. That virus is injected into your body with the idea that this weakened adenovirus, which is as tough as nails to begin with, goes into your cells and infects them and causes the cell to begin to produce something that is perhaps equally as dangerous. We don't know. We know the spike protein is a very ugly, unpleasant, hostile element to have in your body. It is synthetic, and the other end of the virus family, the other two, Pfizer and Moderna, produce a different means of causing that spike protein to be produced. And you have trillions of cells in your body. And it doesn't take very long for this adenovirus, apparently, to spread all over the body, infecting maybe trillions, ultimately, of cells. We don't know. Enough to flood the body with the synthetic spike protein, which is the last thing you want in your body. And the idea that you're going to have that produced in your body to get your immune system to learn about it before you get infected with that terrible coronavirus, which is a joke, is ludicrous. The whole thing is ludicrous. We're talking with Erica Kahn about this. Let's go back to the conversation about this adenovirus. Now, you mentioned that one of the areas that this adenovirus will infect is the eye, the human eye. Now, that kind of fits with something that we've been getting reports about.
Yeah, in fact, there's something like 14,000 cases of eye issues resulting following these vaccines. The most recent alarming one is that people, in a lot of cases, these are young kids, teenagers, I imagine, that are actually bleeding from their eyes. And, you know, I don't know which vaccine they had. I have to say that. But if it was the Johnson & Johnson using this adenovirus, recombinant adenovirus, it's conceivable that, you know, the virus has infected the epithelial cells in the eye, which it's known to do, and perhaps that is why it's bleeding. We know all of these seem to be associated with a clotting issue and possibly damage to the endothelium, making it for a leaky endothelium and in the inability to clot normally. Mm-hmm. So it could be a range of different effects happening. It's really mind-boggling how any of these, you know, adverse outcomes are justifiable for a virus that really was not ever a problem in kids, and nor in the general healthy population.
Never a problem for kids, and yet they're shooting these poor kids up. They killed a one-year-old and a two-year-old recently in a so-called trial of children from 6 months to 11 years of age. Whatever parent would allow a child to be injected with something as ugly as this, utterly experimental, is not a parent. That's incredible to me that some parent could do that to a child. I just don't get it. And there are homes right now where there's an empty bedroom and an empty bed because the parents made a stupid decision. So think about that. Now, this virus, you called it a chimeric virus. A chimera, explain what a chimera is and why the adenovirus is a chimeric virus. That is, it makes it even more insane to put into the body, weakened or not.
Yeah, a chimera is a combination of two different genomes. So you've got the adenovirus that's now has the genes of part of a coronavirus in it. And then that is a chimera.
Okay.
And, you know, this would never happen. Yeah, it's a hybrid. This would almost certainly never occur naturally. And it's genetically modified organism made in a lab. And the worrisome thing, too, the adenovirus is attractive because it can fit a good size segment of another genome inside of it and still maintain its ability to infect or transfect. But the worrisome thing is that the adenoviruses can take up a chronic persistent condition in the body. In fact, a lot of people have latent adenovirus infections, and they just hang out in the tonsils or adenoids, in some cases the intestinal tract, and they live with the host for the rest of their life without really causing
herpes.
A problem. Yeah, like herpes, yep. But they can be shed intermittently under conditions of stress or weakness. These latent and viral infections can reactivate and begin shedding again. And typically the adenovirus is shed through respiratory droplets if it's a respiratory infection, or more commonly the GI tract, because a lot of times it does take up residence in the intestinal tract and is shed in the feces, which ends up in the sewers, and it's common to recover quite a bit of adenovirus in the sewer system. Certainly in water supplies are often contaminated with these adenoviruses. So we essentially have now, if this thing is spreading, and it appears that it is, there's going to be an endless source of this chimeric adenovirus in the environment. Indefinitely.
So, okay, when you say spreading, apparently people who are being injected with the J&J and the AstraZeneca are now transmitting, broadcasting this attenuated, maybe it's recovered, adenovirus, which could be combining with other things in your body to become a chimera. In other words, your body is not just a factory for producing synthetic spike proteins, but potentially throwing off these chimeric adenoviruses, correct?
Yes, I don't think it has it's less likely than the Moderna or the Pfizer with its little segment of mRNA, I think,
right,
to recombine with an existing virus. We don't know. I mean, what's happening at the nanoscale inside somebody's cell? Who knows? It could be anything. But these things are shedding. There's no doubt about it. There's enough reports of people having come into contact with vaccinated people who are getting seriously ill. I mean, bedridden ill. There was a story of a woman that came into contact with a person working at a deli in a supermarket, and apparently when the transaction was taking place, handing the cheese or the cold cuts over the counter, they did have skin contact. And the next day, the customer became deathly ill and wound up in the hospital for 2 weeks from this transient exposure from a vaccinated person.
Wow.
And I'm hearing stories like that daily.
What was the diagnosis?
You know, this is just a sniffle.
Excuse me, what was the diagnosis of the person who was hospitalized after being exposed? Did they come up with anything that they released?
It wasn't revealed what was wrong,
no,
but it was some sort of life-threatening infection or something that needed medical intervention to, assist her.
Got it.
But I'm hearing this from now many people, particularly medical practitioners and clinicians who were coming into contact with these vaccinated people during the course of a day as a part of their practice. And they're not well. And in some cases they get sick to the point where they've got to go to bed for a few days and try to get over it. So this is not just a little sniffle or a minor cold or a headache. These people are really getting sick with something.
And okay, what are the possibles? Synthetic spike protein, possibly a chimeric or altered hybrid adenovirus, which is a recombinant virus, I'm assuming that it's attenuated when they're injecting it in people, but what's to keep it from replicating? Supposedly it can't, but what's to keep it from replicating? It seems like it would almost have to, unless the actual injection is full of billions of these attenuated, non-replicatable adenoviruses. But let's just say that they recover from being weakened and attenuated and become strong, and they're thrown off and shed through the skin, through through your breath, through a cough, a sneeze, sweat, all body fluids. It just sounds like to me someone planned a very sophisticated multi-layer attack on the human species, a fatal attack. These are going to kill people, ultimately, and probably already are.
Yeah, they've known about this. Well, there's two different... Let's talk about the transmissible vaccines that they've been looking at for a number of years. There's attenuated, which when you take the wild, natural virus and you weaken it in some fashion.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really what we're talking about here now. We're talking about an actual recombinant virus that has the genes removed, supposedly, that will allow it to replicate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that enough of those genes are being taken out, because it's got to be somewhat infective, but it's not supposed to be productive or truly infective.
It seems like a pretty damn fine line, doesn't it?
But the intention was in developing this technology is, and you can look at in Nature magazine, the publication Nature, it's a peer-reviewed science journal, July 2020, there was an article entitled Self-Disseminating Vaccines to Suppress Zoonosis.
Right.
And it goes into
that.
Great detail about using these vector vaccines, these recombinant vector vaccines, with the intention of having them be transmissible so that you don't have to vaccinate an entire population. Now, the question is, how transmissible do you want to make them? And there's some options. We can make them one degree of infection or infectious, meaning the person that's vaccinated can transmit it to the first set of people or the first in their proximity.
First contact.
And it won't go beyond.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And if it's
first
truly
layer
transmissible,
of contact.
First layer of contact, yes. So that's called a transferable vaccine. A transmissible vaccine is the vaccinated person can infect the person who comes into contact with them, and then that person can turn around and infect more people. That's a transmissible vaccine.
Got it.
And it sounds great. You know, if you want to wipe out rabies, that sounds great. But the problem is these viruses are prone to evolution. They don't stay the same. And they believe, and this is completely speculative, and it's an assumption because it hasn't been proven one way or another. They believe that the virus will just weaken and peter out during this process of so-called evolution. But there's no proof that it can't go the other way and actually evolve to be more pathogenic and virulent under certain conditions. So I am not really sure what we're looking at here. Certainly the people that come in direct contact with a vaccinated person are being infected with something. Now, whether they can turn around and give it to somebody else, I can think of one anecdotal case where, yes, that did happen, where the husband was at work all week with a bunch of vaccinated people. He got sick and was able to transmit whatever that was to his wife the next day. That tells me it's transmissible, not just transferable, but transmissible.
I agree. How else can you?
Yeah.
Assess it.
So it's not an abortive infection. It keeps going. And I think what they've unleashed on us is a real horror of a virus, being that, you know, that this adenovirus is not easily neutralized or I guess killed, if you want to say that, even though it's not alive, but it's not easily
eradicated.
Dealt with. Eradicated or just neutralized or whatever from the environment. It's persistent.
All right, well,
sooner or later, we're all going to come into contact with it, it would seem, unless we want to live like Howard Hughes.
Yes, okay. Now, the human body, trillions of cells, I don't know that they've published this, what kind of effective projection into the totality of human body cells would they expect an injection like the J&J to achieve? What's their guess? Half the cells? Because it's an adenovirus, it seems to like most any cell. And if it's able to replicate, it has to be, unless they're giving enormous numbers of these things with each injection.
Well, typically, an adenovirus can infect any cell that has a CAR receptor. That's C-A-R. And that stands for Coxsackie virus, adenovirus receptor. And that can include myocytes, that's a muscle cell, fibroblasts, endothelial cells, epithelial cells, the cornea, pancreatic islet cells, cardiac cells, brain cells.
Wow. All right. Well, this is what they're injecting into millions upon millions of people, ultimately hundreds of millions. And their goal is to inject about 80% of the world with, I guess, one or the other. They're even talking about using the J&J as a booster for the Pfizer. I say mix and match.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Mix and match.
How much more obvious does it get that their design is nothing but harm for the human body? There's no logical, pragmatic reason for any of this. None of it. First of all, it's a bioweapon virus that was created and released, very weak and not very effective at killing people, regardless of the stupid lies they put out as statistics of dead people in the U.S., They admitted finally that only 6% of those people died allegedly only, of the coronavirus. So you got this crappy, weak virus, and then you come up with the vaccines to do that. That's the kill shot. That's what they were after from the beginning. This has all been planned out. Now, you get an adenovirus, and you just heard Erica say that this virus doesn't necessarily have to go away. It can set up house in your body for the rest of your life, ordering cells to produce what? The synthetic spike protein, which we know is a clot factor, a deadly clot factor. We know this. And it may be much worse than that. We know that it also suppresses, and some people say, outperform your own immune system, which is completely broad-based and non-selective. It'll take on anything that your body gets. So you lose your immune system, and it's replaced with one antibody produced by what's left of your immune system, and that antibody is to take on a never-ending supply of synthetic spike proteins in your body. How insane can it get? You're not ever going to get rid of the spike proteins. You're not ever going to get rid of this single antibody response from your once vibrant immune system. You're screwed. Yeah. Excuse my gutter talk, but you are.
Yeah, when you think, if you're unsuccessful in shutting this pathological process down, then you're going to be contending with, yeah, a handicapped immune system, and then foreign proteins that are just flooding the system, you know, just randomly ending up who knows where. I mean, we know for sure that spike protein does cross the blood-brain barrier, and you know what it does when it gets into the brain. It can't be good. So we're looking at some kind of amyloidosis of some sort, Lewy body dementia, Parkinson's, ALS.
Misfolded. Any protein the brain cells happen to produce could end up being changed into a misfolding protein as well.
Yeah,
to go along with the amyloids. Yeah.
Yeah, so take your pick. There's no benefit to producing spike protein on an ongoing basis or ever for that matter. This was not the way to approach this unless there was some ulterior motive or some other agenda.
Gosh, you think?
It makes no sense.
This maybe, huh? Like they were planning this 20 years ago, 30 years ago, who knows?
Yeah. And, you know, and they can switch up the ingredients at their own discretion at any time. And, you know, this whole CRISPR technology that involves gene editing uses the same type of technology or platform to introduce this stuff into the body. And you don't know what's coming through that needle. Could be anything.
And as you just said, they could be changing this so-called formula every week. We don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, on a whim.
No one is holding them up to... No, of course. No one is evaluating, checking. No one is doing the research on these. And if anybody is, they're not going to talk about it because they kill doctors, too. Lots of scientists. Remember all the scientists who were killed, everyone, several years ago? There were a whole batch of them. And then there were doctors. It's not good. So, okay, real quick, we just have a minute left. What do you know about this pine needle tea that people are talking about? Suramin? What do you know?
Yeah, I believe because Suramin was taken off the market, curiously, before this whole thing happened. Suramin might have been, could have been, probably would have been, since they took it off the market, a way of dealing with the effects of the spike protein when it docks onto a cell and an ACE2 receptor. It can stop the mechanism of the destruction that's caused by the spike protein. I don't know if the pine needle tea has, you know, a therapeutic amount in there to deal with the onslaught of spike proteins that are going to be flooding a person's body. You know, maybe it's good for people who are not vaxxed that are being exposed to these aerosols transiently. But I don't have a lot of confidence in it. But at this point, you know, if you want to try it, why not?
Here's another angle. Always watch what the FDA goes after to ban and make illegal. They just forced Amazon to take NAC, N-acetylcysteine, off the market. It's still available, and I would urge everyone to get some. Put it away if you don't want to take it. You might need it. But clearly, there's something in NAC that is contraindicated in terms of their plans to roll out this spike protein pandemic. There's your pandemic. So NAC, look at the list. Curcumin is on the list. CoQ10 is on the list for review and possible removal from the supplement market. This is insane. It just doesn't get any better.
Well, they would ban all supplements. They tried to ban supplements, I don't know, 10 or 20 years ago. And you know, various practitioners and
right.
Consumers fought them, and they won. But now
the
they're just going after
industry.
Each one piecemeal, just one by one.
That's right.
Picking them
all. All right, so get some NAC. If you want to try the tea, just do it with the best counsel you can avail yourself of. Figure it out. I just don't know. Around other people who have been vaxxed, you can see them now because they're not wearing masks in states that still require masks. They're allowing people who have been fully vaccinated not to wear masks. So you can kind of see who's been vaxxed. And those are the people you kind of want to stay away from. So we the unvaxxed are actually now forced into considering social distancing, mask wearing. Not that masks are going to stop tiny, tiny proteins necessarily, but it's better than nothing, I guess. If there's a droplet attached to it, then you might have a chance. Okay, Erica, we got 30 seconds. Thank you very much for everything again. We'll talk soon. Great job.
My pleasure. Yep.
Okay. Good night.
Hey, hang in there.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody. Back with you tomorrow night.